Darian Tewitt with Life Success Hacks with section four of our series of talking. And Darian, you were just saying something about jumping in. What was that?
We think about things. We think about it a lot instead of just jumping in. And I find personally that when I jump in without all these thoughts, I tend to get started and learn along the way, and things always turn out better than I even imagined it would have turned out.
Without doing all the thinking about it along the way.
Yes. I would be classified as a thinker. So the more you think, I find sometimes it's easy to get fearful and to procrastinate on things because you tend to want all the green lights to be on before you go. And life doesn't work like that. you got to go sometimes in spite of things. I just find when I jump into things, especially new stuff, of course, you educate yourself. You have some background about what you're kind of doing. But all the nitty-gritty and all the minutiae details, I find when I just leave those to the side and jump in, I tend to then go, okay, I'm in the water. I'm already wet. Let's see where this takes me.
Well, it's like that expression, getting your ducks in a row. And people think that you have to get your ducks in a row before you go. But if you ever watch a duck, the mama duck gets going and the ducks fall into line behind her, right?
That is so true.
If she waited for the ducks to get in a row, they wouldn't be getting anywhere.
So, and you know, it's funny you mentioned that because that goes back to my thoughts that if we look at animals in nature, we know how to live. Even that same analogy with the mama duck, like, you know, most times under the surface of the water, the web feet are going crazy. But on the surface, the ducks look nice and calm and serene.
Just gliding along. Yeah, right. Yeah, good point. Yeah, that's a good point, too. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, so section one is the tools, section two, the accelerators, section three, the pitfalls. And now we're going to talk today about section four, the secrets, the thoughts and detachment, the paradox of paradoxes.
Isn't it amazing how everything that I would be chasing seemed to run away from me because I'm focusing on chase? So of course, if I'm focusing on chase, which is a thought, it requires me to chase because it's giving me what I want. Oh, and me not knowing this is what I don't want, right? And then when I stop chasing and I just do the work that's required, it seems to the other things just align with me. I'll give you an example of how thoughts can really affect what happens to you. So I noticed when I was on my way to build my seven-figure portfolio, my thoughts was always accomplishing it, doing the work to get there, scaling it, and business was great. Then I got into, now I've achieved this, how can I protect it? So then my thoughts switched to protecting it, protecting it, protecting it, protecting it. What if I lose it? What if I lose it? What if I lose it? And then all the turmoil just started happening. Business deals were going bad. I would get a call from a tenant about something that's happening, which I was vibrating, lose it, lose it, lose it. So anything to make money or my energy come out of my coffers was happening. And so when the whole, I would call it debacle, happened, and then I started focusing again on growing and creating and learning and rebuilding, I find things started happening again to take me out of what I would call the doldrums. So I prove in my life that thoughts are really what makes or breaks your life. They can help you either way, and they're impartial. They don't judge you. They just give you what you ask them to give you. They don't sit there and say, really, do you really want this? I think they go, okay, that's what he wants. Let me grant it to him.
They grant your wishes.
Yeah. That's why I call them the secret sauce.
Right. So then the secret to the sauce then is to direct your thoughts, recognize how they function and direct them. And sometimes that means taking hold of your thoughts, right?
A lot of times that means taking hold of the thoughts and not let them and not let them steer you in the direction that they want you to go. So what I've learned to do, this tactic that I've learned to follow, is when I'm having thoughts that are not really constructive to me or self-serving to me in a positive way, what I would stop and do is to recognize that, okay, Darian, right now you're becoming your thoughts. When I'm able to separate the two entities, I'm able to control them now, because I'm like, no, they're not in control. I am in control. There's a different person watching from behind the thoughts. Mm-hmm. So when I look at it that way, then the thoughts become more, I can mold them and shape them into what I would like rather than what they tell me. So even let's take this podcast, right? When the thought of doing the first one, I was like, okay, I need to do all this big preparation or I won't do a decent job at it. And so if I didn't think that I have it mastered, I would delay the time frame. But then I switched the thoughts to, you're just talking. Talking is not so hard. You're talking to someone that you enjoy talking to and you enjoy listening to. It's a nice platform. Maybe someone may get some benefit from this. And so it started becoming like, hey, wait a minute. I can't wait for the next session to happen. And that's just by changing, tweaking the perspective and the outlook of each thought that I was having prior.
Mm-hmm.
For the listeners, I want to say this. The trick is when you can, so I'll back up a bit. You know, when then all these nice things happening to us and good things happening, our thoughts are positive. And then when circumstances change, we change our thoughts to fit the circumstances. The trick is, no matter what's going on around you, especially in the not so quote unquote good times, the trick is, can you influence your thoughts? Because it's really hard to be upbeat when, you know, it looks like all around you is crumbling. But if you're able to realize that crumbling is not such a bad thing, because it could be a new beginning, shift your perspective, those thoughts become now thoughts that help you to advance to the next stage, whatever that next stage may be.
That's the trick too, is to see it as an advancement, because when things are going great, as you say, you're feeling great, thoughts are great, you're upbeat. And then if something goes wrong, or when something goes wrong, which, you know, at some point things aren't going to go exactly as you expect, then you can interpret that different ways. You can see it as something that's wrong with you, something as wrong in general, like as if you're interpreting it. As long as you recognize that you're seeing it as wrong, when actually it could be a very timely way that your attention is being brought to something that is ready and perfectly timed to change or adjust your direction. And so I think it's important to watch how you're interpreting it and be open to what wants to be revealed to you.
Yep. And I've had, well, you just pretty much described my life in a nutshell right there. you said it very eloquently. I've learned to see life like a Ferris wheel at a theme park. It's all part of the ride, but sometimes you're located on top of the Ferris wheel, at the top where it turns, and it's inevitable that it's going to go to the bottom again, but it's all part of a great ride. And you get thrills at the top. You also get thrills at the bottom, so either which way, it's a great journey. But interpretation is key of how you view things and your thoughts. Like, I'll give you an example that I wrote in the book. You know, when I was younger and there's a certain school I wanted to go to. And all I thought about was that. It didn't matter to me that, you know, my parents didn't have the money to afford it. I didn't really take that into consideration. Well, I kind of did, but I said, when the time is right, something will work out. That's what I would say, right? And I was like 12 years old at the time. And I'm like, something will work out. And then before you know it, you know, they started allowing parents to pay in installments. They've never done that before. It was always you pay up front or you don't get in. And then different things started happening. And I'm like, okay, wait a minute, what's happening? But of course, I didn't understand. I did not understand what was taking place. I did not know that my attitude and my thoughts towards those events, my attitude and thoughts were influencing those events. I just thought it was like the luck of the draw. And then you're like, okay, we were very poor as a family. So you're like, okay, about time we got a break. It was only in my later teens that I realized, wait a minute, when I'm open to things and open to learning about things and open to some of the quote unquote pitfalls that could happen, when I'm open to bring all of that in, I've had some of my best moments and my biggest achievements. And when I am very closed in, fearful, negative, pessimistic, things that happen as well. So I'm like, okay, what if I'm the one controlling all of this? Which at the time was not the easiest thing to accept, because coming from a culture where it's very much based on tradition, an external body that's in charge of all of this. And I'm not saying there isn't one or there is, but I'm saying at that time, you dare not tell your folks that, hey, what if we're controlling all of this? Because that would be blasphemous and sacrilegious.
So you said, I just missed it, you said Christian?
Yeah, Christian background, yes. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I started asking myself the question, what if we're controlling some of this? What if it's me that's creating my reality day after day? And what if the reality is delayed? So what if what I do right now doesn't reveal itself tomorrow? What if it reveals itself 10 years from now? Because it compounds, right? There's the compounding effect. So I was thinking about that, but, you know, I always thought maybe I'm crazy. Why would a, you know, 17 or 18-year-old person think of this?
And so you managed to find a way to think about that without feeling like you were going against the religious thought, or how did you incorporate it?
A little bit of both. I felt like I was going against the grain for sure, and didn't really want to talk about it with a lot of people, because when I tried to talk to it with people, I was considered to be weird and, you know, why are you thinking about that stuff? But then my personality is such that I don't like to follow the crowd. So it kind of made me feel even more special that, okay, maybe I am indeed crazy, but at least I'm not doing what everyone else is doing. And I can have an open mind to ask, okay, what else is there? And it's not like I don't believe it the traditional way. I'm just like, why are we just accepting something without searching for ourselves, right? And so when I started thinking new thoughts about my living conditions and challenges of those circumstances, I started seeing a light, you know, a light at the end of the tunnel. I started feeling better, and I started saying, okay, yeah, you don't have to always be in this position. Mm-hmm. And then I would have all of a sudden seemed like they appeared out of nowhere, that they existed, started sounding like me, started thinking like me, when in reality they were always there, but my thoughts were aligning me to the other people as opposed to the people that really thought like me, because now I changed my outlook. So I had started thinking about, okay, I don't have to grow up and just get a quote unquote regular job like everyone else and repeat the cycle of poverty. So the idea of, yes, you could do something different and maybe better, but better is relative. I said, maybe you could do something different. Maybe you could do that. And then I had no reason, like that example I gave you of school. I mean, I thought, had no reason for this to change, but it did. And then I started meeting other people and started seeing things that I wanted to accomplish being done. And I think that really helped me along the way. It really did.
So it's a natural segue, really, the two secrets, because you're seeing how your thoughts influence your experience. Some of that is connected to emotion, to your feelings about things. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I mean, it is a paradox to think that detachment is a secret. So there must be a secret about that to how you can also be detached. So maybe that is like being detached from the outcome, even though you have something maybe specifically in mind, maybe a detachment from how it's going to happen. Maybe that's what you're talking about.
Both the outcome and how it's going to happen. Because what do we really know? And that's an honest question. What do we really know? And what do I mean by that is this. We think we know how this works, how this space that we're living in, how this cosmos, how this universe works. When in reality, we really don't know. We cannot prove that what we think is what actually is. So what I've learned to do is I normally don't know how I'm going to do something. Mm-hmm. I have a framework. I have a guideline. But sometimes when I start doing that thing, the framework and guideline just goes out the window because that thing is teaching me that, okay, wait a minute. No, it's not going to work how you think it's going to work. Right. So all I try to do is to just have my desire that I want to do this. And I figure if I do this long enough and learn along the way, I will accomplish it, which brings in the second part of not worrying about the outcome. Because when you're worried about the outcome, you tend to put a time frame on when I want this to happen. When you put a time frame on it, then you tend to cut corners. So I'll give you an analogy of driving down the street. There's a reason why there's speed limits, right? If I'm driving down the street and I'm putting a time frame on when I need to get to a place, chances are I will hit the accelerator a little bit more than I normally would have if I didn't put a time frame on it. At the same time, why is it a paradox? If I'm speeding and I crash, then A, I may never get there. And B, if I get there, I'm going to get there late. So it's going to be counterproductive to what I was trying to achieve anyway. And I'm a person that believes that energy is real. I think we're just energy at the end of the day. So when I say don't worry about the outcome, it doesn't mean you're not going to put in the action and the effort and the work to accomplish what you want to accomplish. But fall in love with the process itself and get to enjoy the process, or at least accept that it's part of the journey, and fall in love with that as opposed to the outcome. And here's another example that maybe will bring this point a bit more home. When I set out on this path of being a thought leader, I was falling in love with the idea of people subscribing to me, people following me. I can have that influence on the people, but here's what wasn't happening at the time. I wasn't in love with the actual things that would have made me become a thought leader. So for instance, I wasn't writing as much. I wasn't putting out anything. I wasn't even talking to people about their greatness or, you know, things like that. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. You enjoy being the person that everyone is going to quote and everyone is going to read about and speaking in front of 20,000 people. But that's not it. How about the nights when you're writing and you're writing because of the love of being able to help people with thoughts and things that could really change their lives, as opposed to being on a stage and everyone's clapping you? So it's the journey. And when I switch my thought process, it actually frees my energy up. And that's why I said, don't worry about the outcome. It actually switches my energy up, and all sort of new ideas that I could quickly jot down on paper started come. And well, not new ideas, but ideas that I could phrase in a new way. Mm-hmm. That's the better way to put it. There were ideas that probably existed since the beginning of time, but I was able to put them in a new, fresh perspective. And that's when some of this thing started taking off. And, you know, there are days when I would have quite a few clients who would call and want to work with me. And then there are days when I would have no one or one person. But each day I said, okay, this is part of the process. And I wasn't thinking about the end goal of money in bank account. I was just thinking of, I'm providing a service. I'm enjoying this. I would get up in the morning and do it, even if, you know, I wasn't being paid. And that really helped me to roll with the punches. In terms of detachment, detachment to me means freeing up energy. So everything that the universe is trying to send to you can enter your vessel, as opposed to you having a shield blocking it, right? You're so attached to one outcome that you're not looking at the five other outcomes that maybe even more beautiful than the one that you wanted.
Well, yeah, because I think that detachment is actually the co-creator with you, right? Like, it's acknowledging that, like, the thoughts are what you can bring to it, that you can manage and direct mm-hmm. and oversee. And the detachment is like a surrender. And I think you talked about that in your book too, is
yes.
the surrender to the force that is.
Yeah, like, what is? That's the best way to put it. What is? Yeah.
There you go. The force that is what is, that's co-creating with you, and acknowledging that that's part of it and that you hold a piece of it, but it's not all up mm-hmm. to you.
And I think that's why we collaboration. So I've never done the essence of life in four C's. And the first C, I call it creating. The second C is collaborating. And so it sums up my philosophy that we're here to help each other and help ourselves. We're here to, you know, live in harmony and collaboration with each other.
Mm-hmm.
However, if we refuse to focus on those two C's, there are two other C's waiting in the wings, which is competing with each other. And that competition will always lead to complaint. And so in my life, I have literally four columns. And I go, what are you focusing on? What are you really doing? Are you competing and complaining? Are you creating and collaborating? And I'm not the smartest guy, not even in my house, but it always works out that when I'm creating and collaborating, I see better results than when I'm competing and complaining. It always just, it seems like the creation and the collaboration part of it works very well for me, as opposed to the other side of the balance sheet. So I think when you're holding on, you know, so much to an outcome that you'd like to see, not knowing if this is really the best thing for you or not, I think that could be dangerous, because there's some other outcomes that could really benefit you more than you think, or you could even ever imagine, because you don't know what you don't know.
Well, yeah, and you can maybe have the insight to delve in more why you're attached to a certain outcome, especially if there's feeling like there's resistance or confusion or an extra holding on to. What's that about?
Yeah, I think discovery is very important. So there's some thoughts that I would have, and I should know how I feel with those thoughts. And if it's something that, my rule is, if it comes up more than twice, I'm going to dive in and figure out, why am I feeling this way? What am I holding on to? Sometimes you're holding on to something that it doesn't even serve you anymore. And especially when it involves other people, like, am I holding on to someone, quote unquote, did me wrong? Why, when I hear that name or anything associated with that person, why did I have that reaction or that feeling? And do I even remember what the issue was in the first place? Because mm-hmm. sometimes, you know, you forget that too, right? You
yeah.
forget what the issue is. And sometimes it's just, if I hear a concept, I would dig in and say, why do I think this way about this? Even the way I am. So I ask myself, why am I considered a high achiever? Why am I so driven? And I was able to link it back to Oh yeah. I didn't have my dad, like, you know, as a kid, he was not in the picture. So that drove me to think that A, I wasn't wanted, and B, okay, I'm going to show him. Right. And then C, I'm so motivated to show him that I did it without him. And then you learn, you know, by the time you get to D, you're like, this is what drives me. Okay, maybe it got me this far. It certainly won't get me any further. So maybe I should switch to now what I call a positive reason for being driven. How about A, is because I like to assist people. B, I want this world to be a better place than, you know, how I met it. And I'm not saying it's a bad place now. I'm just saying I want it to, it could even be better. So let's make it better. And so when I think about it from all those other viewpoints and perspectives, I realize that whatever anger or emotion that I had towards that situation, I'm now objective about it. I can assess it and not worry about its effect on me and its control over me.
Right.
It's just like observing something from a distance. I now can observe it from a distance as opposed to being so consumed, you know? So yeah, that's the biggest thing that detachment has taught me.
Yeah. We can just wrap up to thank you so much, Darian, for writing your book and continuing to live your book, Life thank Success you. Hacks.
You had a lot to do with that title. By the time I was finished writing the book, I could not think of a title.
Yeah, it was a process for sure.
It was just too much at the time. I'm like, oh man, I don't have any other words left. And speaking of surrendering and detachment, I did not attach myself to that title.
And so what is the best website or way for someone to reach you?
It is DarianTuitt.com. So my first name, last name, DerianTuitt.com. I'm in the process of creating a new website called Tasari. And Tasari is Arabic, which means accelerate. So let's go forward. My website or my email as well, Darian@DarianTuitt.com.
Okay, perfect. Well, Darian, again, thank you so much for sharing the highlights of your book with us. And look forward to catching up on getting these podcasts ready to share.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate you having me. The pleasure was all mine.
Okay, well, thank you. And we will talk soon.
Yes, for sure.
Thanks, Darian.